Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Hour 2 of Live the Promise. And if you just joined us, you missed a very powerful first hour. First of all, had Nagame Abedini on to talk about her meeting with the president and updates on her precious husband, who are praying for his release from a prison in Iran. And then we had the Grace and Truth segment with Craig Van Buzek, really looking at some of the items in the news, how not to bury our heads in fear or ignorance, but to take our stand and pray in this day. I am telling you what, I always get a history lesson when Craig is on, and it was a power hour. So go back, if you can, to our website, myfaithradio.com, and listen, because I feel like you'll come away feeling more equipped than ever to take your stand in our day and to not react in fear, but not react in ignorance either. And so we're switching gears now, and my good friend Dr. Greg Smalley joins us. He comes on about twice a month. We'd love to get him more, but he's a busy man. And we're going to talk about how to manage conflict in marriage. And so let me not waste another moment and give him a proper introduction. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He's the author of 16 books. Is that still true, or is there more than that?
I think that they quit printing one. So it's probably down, like four of them are out there.
Yeah, right. He's the author of many books, including The DNA of Relationships, Wholehearted Marriage, Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage. He and his wife, Erin, live in Colorado, with Colorado Springs, to be exact, with their three daughters, Taylor, Murphy, and Annie, and their son, Garrison. You can find his influencer page at our website at myfaithradio.com. Doc, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is always a highlight of my day when I get to be on with you.
We really love it, too. It's always a good time. So as you know, we love to talk scripture. I'm wondering if you came armed with a verse today, and one that you can share with us.
James 1:2, out of one particular version, it says, "When troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity." Mm. And what I love about that is that, you know, for most of us, when we think of the word conflict, you know, when we hear that word, it's really a negative thing. We want to avoid it. We don't want to have conflict. We just want peace and harmony. And so we do everything we can not to fight with others, with our spouse. And yet, I tell you what, more than anything I've learned from being married 23 years is that conflict is such an amazing opportunity because of what it can do for a marriage. Mm.
And if we stop being afraid of conflict and we start to do what you're just saying here, we turn it around and say, hey, this is an opportunity. Even we can go into our fights with a whole different expectation, can't we?
That's the point. See, for so many years, I was so afraid of Erin and I getting into disagreements, arguments, conflict, whatever you want to call it, because I was so conditioned. Because we had a really rough first couple of years. I mean, I remember telling her when we first got married, you know, I'm the son of Gary Smalley. I'm getting my doctorate in marriage and family.
How hard can it be?
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to tell her and explain to her, that this is going to be so amazing. We are not going to be like those other people and have problems. Mm-hmm. I'm like, trust me. I was so off. I could have been more wrong. Because for us, we loved each other wholeheartedly. We loved the Lord. We went to church, and we really struggled with just managing our conflict. And it got to the point, I mean, sadly, Susie, it really did. It got to a point to where I thought we were one more argument away from her leaving me. Mm. That's how bad it got.
And you're making a really good point here that, though, you loved each other. You both were committed to the Lord and committed to marriage. So all those things were there. Somebody listening today might even say, I'm not exactly there. I don't know if I love him anymore. I'm not even sure how committed I am to this marriage. But you were there, and you still were close to the edge. And your point being that how we manage conflict can be a game changer for many marriages.
And for us, it took sort of a catalytic event. you know, I think as we look back on our relationships, you know, there are probably moments that we can look back to and point to and say, you know, wow, although I didn't like that, God, thank you for that, because here's what it did for us. Honestly, we were driving in the car, Aaron, probably 8 months pregnant with our first daughter, Taylor, and we get into an argument, and just, you know, we're discussing something. Our hearts weren't, I mean, terrible to look at, so it's not like that we're screaming and hollering at each other. We just, we're more, we debate each other, we get frustrated with each other, we're both trying to convince the other that our way's the best. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we would do, and it just never went anywhere, so we just would walk away going, well, you know, how unsatisfying was that? We're driving, we get into an argument, It escalated to the point that we just were both just being very harsh with each other. And I had to pull off the side of the road. I was like, I want to make a point so bad that I'm probably going to crash the car unless I pull off into this parking lot. And then we can really talk about this. And so, it was a beautiful, you know, spring day. Her window was down. So we're sitting in this parking lot. There's a health club out in front. And we're just going back and forth, just arguing. And Aaron said something that so pushed one of my buttons. It made me so mad that I said to her sarcastically, I said, well, fine. Okay. If that's how you're going to be, yeah, then you just walk home. I mean, I think she had said something like that, you know, I'm just going to walk home. I'm like, yeah, right. You're 8 months pregnant. Yeah, fine. Just walk home. At the same time that a woman had seen someone had dropped a membership card, she leaned down to pick it up, to thinking it's Aaron's because we're the only car there. At the same time, I'm telling my pregnant wife, fine, then walk home. And so she is telling Aaron, don't be afraid. I can help you get wherever you need to. And just this woman looking at me, glaring at me, in the way, thinking, here's this abusive guy kicking his pregnant wife out of the car. It just, that was it for me. And Aaron and I, and Aaron's like, no, we're totally fine. And we do love each other, actually. You know, and that fish on the back of the car, we love the Lord too, by the way. Yeah. It'll be okay. That was when I said, we can't do this anymore. We got to have help.
And so how did you get help? What'd you do?
You know, it was very humbling. I was very embarrassed. I was thinking that we should, of all people, know how to manage conflict well. I had to swallow my pride. I had to be humble. And we reached out to a close friend of ours who was a mentor couple and just said, we don't know what to do. Here I'm getting my doctorate and I can't tell you how to, I can't figure out how to be successful with my own wife. Could you help? So they invited us over and they began to mentor us. We got into a great Christian counselor that really began to help us. And that was it. So for us, it was, I think for me, I'll speak for me, that I had to get to a point where I was willing to say, this there's got to be a better way. And it was in many ways now that I was, well, both of us were willing to quote unquote fight for our marriage. And a big part of that was us learning how to fight.
I appreciate so much your honesty around that story, Greg, and just your overall, just how transparent you are with your journey, because it really does help and equip us. And wondering if you think back to that mentorship relationship and the counseling, did you identify any gridlock places through those processes where you thought, okay, this is where we continually get stuck because we do this, or we think this, or our aim is this, and we're going to do it different from now on? You know what I mean? Can you think of tools maybe that you took away so that you could show up in conflict differently?
I think one of the places where the counselor was really, really helpful is that he helped me to identify what was really driving the conflict. I always thought it was the topic. So, you know, I think in the car, maybe we're arguing about finances. Actually, Aaron and I did that last night. So if you want a really brand new, fresh example, we can talk about that later.
His eyes get really big.
Like, oh boy. Budgeting.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
That's the bane of my existence. But anyway, so it's never about finances. It's never about kids. It's never about work. It's never about in-laws. That's just the sort of the topic that gets us into it, but that's not what's driving the conflict. And what he was able to help me really understand is that The reason why I engage my wife in an argument to debate her or to whatever we're arguing about, the reason why I do that is because what's getting triggered in me is a deep sense that I am failing in some way, and that sort of represents, let's call it a button, you know, that's a button that gets pushed for me, and I feel like a failure. And I had no idea. I mean, that never would have occurred to me in a million years.
So I know you write about this, these different buttons, and I'd love to even identify some of them, because so often we are looking at the peripheral stuff saying, well, if you didn't do finances this way, if you didn't manage your time this way, but you're saying look deeper at the button that it's pushing, because that's where you're going to start to solve some of these problems. So yours was failure. What was her button? Did she ever identify that?
Hers, the big one, was feeling invalidated. Mm. So I think literally I don't remember exactly the details way back in that car that day, but I imagine what was happening is that she was probably trying to express her feeling around something that made me feel like I was thus a failure. And so now I'm debating with her, trying to explain to her how her feelings are wrong and she's missing it. She's not understanding me. All of it screams that I'm not validating what you think or how you feel. And that's usually what drives it for her, is that she really wants me to get how she feels and to validate that and to say, oh, wow, man, that makes sense. And I get that. And I'm so sorry for how you feel. It's just, you know, when I feel like a failure, what I then try to do is I try to convince her that whatever she's perceiving or whatever conclusions she's drawn, that those are wrong, and I'm not actually a failure.
Mm-hmm. And so she's saying you're a failure, but the fight is telling you that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm feeling failed, so I'm doing everything I can to make her know that I'm really okay and successful and not a failure. And that's what I put my efforts and energies into. And that's how we just keep just spinning around within these conflicts. See, I didn't have any idea. I no one ever said, hey, let's look beneath the topic and actually figure out what stuff is really getting triggered for you. Mm. And that's it. You know, another big one for me is feeling controlled.
Mm-hmm. And so, if you're feeling controlled, sit up straight because you're slouching. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. His eyes got really big just now.
Yeah. Hey, I can push a little button, it would disconnect me.
I know.
You can have
true.
A fun conversation with you.
Yes. Then I would feel controlled.
He would feel failed.
Exactly. See, this vicious cycle. You know, I wish so bad, Greg, we had the bullets in one of your books about these different buttons, because I know friends listening are going to identify with them. So if you, if you can, even from your memory, let's talk about some of these buttons, because maybe you don't relate to the idea of feeling like a failure. The one that came up for me was feeling made insecure, not in the insecurity way, but destabilized. If you're busy over here, you're not taking care of business, suddenly I feel like we are not protected. So love to hear from you, and maybe we can help you get to the bottom of your chronic arguments. What's underneath it? Give us a call. You can even call anonymously, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is With a Promise. I have my good friend Dr. Greg Smalley on today talking about managing conflict and relationship. And you said something so interesting before the break, Greg, about when you realized early on in marriage that when you'd have these recurring arguments, that it wasn't the issue, even though that was the topic, maybe money, children, whatever, time, but you had to look at underneath what buttons were being pushed. And I was thinking about different things that happened when I was a young girl, great family and everything, but just financially hard things. And then, of course, being jumped and being beat up when I was a young girl by some rogue teenage boys. Then you move ahead to my early years of all the medical debt we had early on in marriage. So whenever Kev would get in a mode where he's overworking and we're not in crisis and things at home would kind of fall off the plate, it would rise something up in me. But what it was underneath it was this destabilization, that by you not paying attention to some of the things that keep things running here, I'm suddenly feeling destabilized and insecure in a way. You know, I told you that my word picture was, it's like you're taking the roof off of our house and putting it on at church where you're giving all your time in addition to all your work, leaving us exposed to the elements. And we really worked through that. But it was so good for me to say, underneath it all is my own fear of you letting go of care for us. And so how does a person do that to really walk it through till they get to the core button that's being pushed?
That's amazing insight. First of all, I think that's what it comes down to, is that we have to understand that all of us have buttons. It's a product of living in a fallen world, existing in this earth. Bad things are going to happen for you. You're able to trace some significant moments that sort of led to this overall sense of just, you know, there's times where I feel insecure, not taken care of, whatever it is for you. I think that's a part of how we get there, is just to accept that we have them. What are they? Then we pay attention to moments where we're hurt or frustrated. We get angry. We get upset. See, I'm telling you, we only get hurt and upset and angry because that stuff, some of our buttons have been triggered. Mm. So then it's a matter of just stepping back. And even if this is hours later or whatever, just going, man, what was that about? I'll give you a good example. You know, I work here at Focus on the Family. And so we had one of our executive meetings the other day, and someone said something that, I mean, I just got fired up, upset. I mean, I just felt it. I felt my cheeks flush. I felt just, you know, I'm like, okay, quit talking, because, man, I want to go after someone. And I was just so mad.
And that's not like you.
No.
I mean, it really
isn't. I'm pretty even keeled. But, oh, something happened. And what I did, we were about to break for lunch. And so they brought lunch in. And so I just got up. And as everybody sort of heads towards to get their plate or whatever, and I just took literally a lap outside this boardroom and just kind of walked for about 5 minutes just around the office. Just,
good for you.
You know, wherever. And what I was asking, though, is it started with, what is going on? Man, I feel it. Something triggered in me. What is going on? And that's hard, because when our buttons get pushed, a part of just the physiology of our brain is that our amygdala, that's a part of our brain that kind of controls the fight or flight part of who we are. It's our emotional part of our brain. Really, it's our emotional brain, the amygdala. And when that thing gets triggered, it sort of hijacks all of the information into this fight or flight mode. And that's why sometimes it's hard to think and see clearly. But as I was walking around, I tell you what, just asking the Lord, just praying and going, God, I don't know what is going on for me right now. I don't have a clue. And as I was walking, I was able to finally pinpoint it, that I was feeling incredibly misrepresented. Mm-hmm. Someone was talking not about me directly, but everything he was saying implied, I mean, I know he was talking about me, and what he was saying I felt was completely false. So that's, you know, and for some people, that's their button, feeling misportrayed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the big battle, is that it's really hard in those moments to try to pinpoint what is actually going on. But we all have them.
And that's the important point. We all have them, because, I mean, that could be another one for me. If you've been misportrayed, it's a sensitive issue, right? And so that is the product of, as you say, living in a fallen world. And so you might love your spouse. You might have a commitment to the Lord. You might say marriage is forever, but you do have buttons. And so to identify those, and once you say, they're often the ones, they're the lies that the enemy brings up in a multitude of ways. They're the ones that may show up in your conflict. But if you can even pause and say, what are some of the things that have happened in my life that continue to send me a message of not enoughness? Now, we've addressed, being invalidated, being controlled, being a failure, being not protected. What are a few others, that people may see show up in relationship?
You know, someone might feel disrespected. That might be a real trigger point for them. You know, I would think that a lot of road rage happens because that feeling disrespected button got triggered by, you know, another driver's behavior or lack of, you know, going fast enough or whatever it is. I think, you know, a lot of guys, I think, struggle with feeling disrespected, controlled, failed, not good enough, don't measure up, inadequate. I think those women can feel those as well, but we just see a lot of guys who kind of struggle with those things. What's interesting, a lot of the women struggle with things like feeling unloved, feeling devalued, worthless.
Not protected.
Not protected, insecure, you know, things like that. So I'm not saying that all women are going to feel that way and all men will feel these way. It just, the point is that there are a lot of buttons that can get pushed. And the question is, can I get really good in those moments of kind of stepping back and trying to get that awareness?
Would you say, Greg, as you get healthier, as God does different levels of healing, as you just grow in your walk with God and grow in your walk with Aaron, does that button get smaller, or is it just something that's a reality of living on earth? Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I think some people might have giant buttons and others, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's a right analogy or not, but have you noticed a change in how and when that thing gets triggered for you?
You know how the Apostle Paul talks about sort of this thorn in his side that is sort of always there?
What
is
he meant
there?
Was a button, right?
Well, I would. He was wrong. I've written my own version of the Bible, and in my version, it does say I have this button in my side.
I'm so sorry. Keep going. You know,
that just pushed my button.
I know.
But anyway. I think in many ways it's like that I think some of our buttons will act like that thorn in our side that sort of will always be there. Because I think what's significant, if I didn't have these buttons, you know, what do I need Jesus for? You know, if I can manage conflict perfectly and exist in relationships without getting my stuff stirred up, you know, I mean, I'm pretty self-sufficient and I think that some of our buttons really do represent opportunities for us they're there as an opportunity to be successful only by the strength of Christ. And failure represents that in me. I mean, I've been teaching this, Susie, for what, 15 years? I know that one, and it still gets triggered.
Isn't that amazing?
I've grown up.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, somebody who just looks at you from the outside in, you've got your doctorate. You hold an executive position at the largest family ministry in the world. You've got a beautiful family. You're kind of a big deal. But, I mean, that's why I love your honesty about it, because it's like that shows you how deep it goes. It may not seem reasonable to anybody else, but nobody knows where you've been, what you've had to overcome to get where you've had to overcome. I mean, learning disability and different things, it's downright heroic to me what you've accomplished. But you can sure see how the lie can still get in there. Enemy knows where your buttons are and where what you've had to overcome. And that's where he goes, isn't it?
Absolutely. For me, I'm always having to battle feeling like I'm failing in some way. And that's the thorn in my side. Mm. And I do thank God for that, because I realize now that I'm incapable of eliminating that, solving that without really going to him. And like I did walking around the office, you know, my only option was to say, God, boy, give me some insight right here, right now. And that's why when, you know, I don't think that I feel misportrayed a lot. Maybe I do, and I'm not even aware of it, but that was sort of a new deal, but that's exactly what it was. And what's interesting, when you can put a name to it, there's a way in which that insight just, it calmed me down. Because all of a sudden now I'm going, okay, God, I'm going to you. So I'm in prayer with you right now as I'm walking around, and you're giving me some amazing insight. I mean, it's like, all right, you're here.
Yeah.
Now what do we do?
Right. And you engage your faith and suddenly you realize, even if I am being misrepresented, God is with me in this. And boy, great conversation. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in just a moment. having a great conversation with my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley. We're talking about conflict in marriage. And Greg, I think we spent more time than we probably planned, but I feel like that was a God thing about talking about these buttons that get pushed. And when we start to fight, we're kind of managing the symptoms, but we need to go to the core issue. And I think the reason this is important, Greg, is because if we have buttons that are getting pushed and the perpetual lie of not enoughness, or I'm not protected, or I'm not valid, or I'm a constant failure, and you're pushing my buttons, my self-preserving goal will be to get you to quit pushing my button, like to guard the button. But guarding the button isn't the goal, because you're guarding a lie. Like, don't touch the lie, then it won't be there. Well, it's still there. And one of the things you'd said in your prep notes, that combat is bad, conflict is good. So, and you also said that this can be a doorway to intimacy. So with that in mind, talk about the difference between guarding the button, like, I don't want you stirring me up, to seeing this as an opportunity actually to experience a deeper level of healing and to understand yourself even a little bit better.
Well, I think first and foremost, the biggest waste of time would be to try to figure out, how do I guard the button from getting pushed? Mm. It's impossible. That is such a massive waste of energy and effort.
Yet, don't you think lots of people live that way, Greg? I mean, they make self-sabotaging choices so they're protecting themselves, not to be triggered.
They build walls.
Yep.
Yeah, we do a lot of things maybe to keep people from hurting us. Versus, you know what, I just live life going, you know what, people are going to hurt me. They're going to push my buttons. It's inevitable. How about I just learn how to really manage that when it happens? Mm-hmm. And so don't make your goal to get rid of the button. Now, I also believe that God will heal certain buttons. I didn't even know I had this button, but because of an experience in my early 20s, I felt like a total coward. Mm. That was a lie that the enemy really wrote on my heart that became a button. How it showed up in my marriage is that I was very passive, and I abdicated leadership to my wife because I was so afraid of making the wrong decisions, the wrong choice. And that was, I didn't even know that was going on. And when I really had some insight around that, God healed that in a moment. And he's able to do that. I just think, though, that living on this earth, we're going to have these issues. Let's just learn how to manage them when they get triggered.
Okay, that's excellent. And so the difference between combat and conflict.
Yeah, what I love, there's a verse in Hosea 2:18 that says, now God, and here's what's significant about why I'm using this. God is actually talking to his bride, the children of Israel, and he's saying that I will remove all weapons of war from the land. I will remove all swords and bows so that you can lie down and live unafraid in peace and safety. In other words, he is removing the war so that his wife can be safe. Because when people feel safe, their hearts open. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was wanting from his bride. Her heart opened, the children of Israel, their hearts turned back to God. And that's what's significant, is he's saying that I'm going to remove the bad conflict from the land. What he's not saying is I'm going to eliminate all form of conflict. He's just talking about the unhealthy part when we're using weapons, when we're using swords and bows, and how that looks like in a marriage. You know, we might get really defensive. We might get really sarcastic or critical or angry, yell, shut down, stuff, stonewall. I mean, there are weapons like that we use within our conflict. And what God is saying, that's the stuff that we need to get rid of. But conflict is a good thing. Conflict, as it says in James 1:2, is when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity. That was one of the ways that I've grown these years in my relationship with Aaron, is that I really believe at the very core of who I am that when Aaron and I disagree, when we don't see eye to eye, when we're not unified in that moment, when she hurts me, when I hurt her, those all truly do represent an opportunity.
Yeah. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about how God helped us unravel our things. So I've been very honest, too, about that low point in our marriage 15, 17 years ago. So here's Kev working in the commercial construction industry as a project manager. I'm back then writing and speaking. I wasn't doing radio just yet, right? And so in his mind, he was feeling like he wasn't as valid in ministry as I was, because he was working full time in the marketplace. So when he gave all his time to the church to oversee two building campaigns, not one, two. So one of them, he went 2 years working about 75 hours a week with very little input in the marriage. And so that's when I wanted to kill him. I'm just saying. But he was,
I will bury you in one of those buildings.
I'm going to bend all your fingers back. But the truth of the matter was he was dropping things at home, and he would be the first to tell you that. So in his mind's eye, the button for him was not valid, not doing valid ministry work until he was doing something, using his gifts in the context of ministry. So he was using his gifts in church, right? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I'm listening.
And so for me, the button, though, was pushed that you have taken the roof off of our house to be a hero to somebody else, leaving us totally exposed. And the truth was, some things were falling off the plate that were significant and leaving me feeling exposed. So when we both got to the bottom of that, and I learned, he learned, I need to not only take care of these things as core issues, but I need to communicate with you that I'm taking care of them. And then I needed to learn that he needs affirmation for what he does in the marketplace, but also my hope is in the Lord. God's my ultimate protector. We just slowly move towards each other. What can we do to help each other feel safe? But how can we look to God for a validation that we're trying to get from our spouse? And that really is what shrunk our buttons, if I can say that. And so now there's a really almost a given trust in these areas, but we had to work one step at a time to get there.
See, and that would be my argument that why conflict can be a very, very good thing. The combat, don't hear it as a good thing. That's a bad thing. But conflict, like what you guys went through, because as I'm listening to you, the opportunity is that any time that Aaron and I get into conflict, the opportunity is that I will learn something maybe new about myself, about her, and about our marriage. And that's exactly what you're talking about. You were saying, boy, you got better insight on that whole idea of not feeling protected, mm-hmm. and that the roof was taken off of your home, put on all these other things. So one, you got more insight into you. He got insight into himself of going, I'm working all these hours outside of a quote unquote ministry. And so now I need to compensate by, doing all this. So he learned something about him. And then you guys, there were takeaways about your marriage. You realized there were some ineffective patterns or there was something going on, the lack of really time to get. See, you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Those are diamonds. Mm-hmm. I always laugh. One of my favorite stories of my family is when my 17-year-old daughter Murphy, when she was younger, she wanted to go to the Diamond Crater State Park. It's in Murfreesboro, Arkansas. It's the only place in our country that literally you can go and dig for diamonds and you keep whatever you find.
Wow.
Like the biggest one found there was the Uncle Sam diamond, 40 carats.
My goodness.
Someone found it.
That's
and they
amazing.
Just walked away with that 40 karat diamond. Mm. So she wanted to do that. I'll never forget when we have all these, thinking, oh, this is going to be this beautiful place and this lush tropical, this is just amazing place and everybody's, hunting. Well, it was the dirtiest desert looking dirt field. That's all it was. It was a plowed dirt field to where you had to shovel in big buckets of dirt, carry them over, and then dump them into this water and splash in. We were muddy. It was hot. It was the most miserable experience of my life.
Wow.
That feels like conflict. Mm-hmm. That's, that we don't like it and it's messy and you're getting dirty and muddy. But what's true, though, about that Diamond Crater State Park is that there are diamonds there. We just have to keep digging. And I think that's what conflict produces. Like what you guys found, those are those diamonds. That has to become our paradigm. That whatever is going on right here, right now, and we're in a disagreement, the good news is God is going to use it to grow me, you, and our marriage.
Such a good word. And I'm thinking about even the outcome, the ripple effect all these years later is now that I have a deeper knowledge of myself, I look to God to really satisfy some of those things that maybe I was looking to Kevin to satisfy. But I also feel more protective of Kev and he of me because he has internal knowledge of something, a very tender area for me that where I was hurt and I have knowledge of him in a way that it's like nobody can stand in the gap for him like I can as his wife. And that too is also one of the benefits of conflict, isn't it? It's like I can get to know something about you and I'm the person to stand with you and trample lightly or tread lightly versus trample over that thing. But we run over each other in conflict if we're not understanding what the conflict is saying about each other.
Yeah, that's the combat part. And so for me, I was really ill-equipped. All I knew to do when Aaron and I were arguing were more the combat kinds of things, defend myself, argue, debate, shut down. I just had no real skills in knowing how to do this. And that's the good news, is that as long as we believe that conflict, because God says that it's an opportunity, if we believe that, I think the next part is just really learning. There's some key skills. As a matter of fact, I believe that if all we did was one thing to do conflict differently, I guarantee you that it would make a huge difference within your marriage.
Okay,
I mean,
gotta tell me.
There's a lot of things that we can do differently, but I'm telling you, as long as we did one thing differently.
What is it?
How I say this is the temptation when we're in conflict is to stay engaged in the relationship and force, power through, somehow work this out relationally first. That's the temptation. We are in a relationship. Aaron and I are married. We're fine. Last night, talking through the budget, you know, as we began to disagree and, you know, buttons got pushed and now we're arguing. It was calm, but we were totally frustrated with each other. The biggest thing that I've learned is that the worst mistake that you can make is to first try to work out your problems relationally. That's the worst thing that you can do.
Why is that? Why is that the worst?
Because it doesn't work. Because when your buttons are pushed and you're frustrated and, you know, whatever button has been stirred up, see, what happens is your heart closes. It's like that little roly-poly bug. You flick the little thing and it right into a ball. See, your buttons get pushed, your heart closes, and now you're just reacting. That is a very dangerous place to be.
So you can't really solve anything when you're in reaction mode. Okay,
no.
So the best thing then is to walk away or what?
The very best thing is to take a break, call a timeout, and step away so that you can get your heart back open. That's like, remember I was telling you the story when I was at Focus in that leadership team meeting. I mean, I had to walk away and walk around. And what I did during that time is I prayed. I mean, I did some things that got my heart back open. I was able to come back in. I went straight to the guy.
Good for
you. Who had been saying things that, and I told him, I said, what I realized is that I'm just feeling really misportrayed right now because I know what you're talking about, even though you're not saying my name, and I just don't feel that's accurate at all. And he went, oh, no. And he was able to reframe what he was trying to say. And I went, oh, I get it. And he said, man, I never would have guessed you would have felt that way. Thank you for coming and saying that to me. Thanks. So literally, I learned something about me, and we were able to work this thing out. But I'm telling you, Susie, that never would have happened had I gone to him first when I was really upset.
Because he would have pushed his buttons, right?
Yeah. I would have been defensive, and I would have been, you know, really, I probably wouldn't have yelled at him, but I would have wanted to. You know, I mean, I don't know what I would have done, but that's what I'm saying, that if we take a moment and step away and do some things, whatever we need to do to get our heart back open, then see we're able to reengage in with an open heart. See, now I'm ready to listen. When my heart is closed, I don't want to listen. I want you to listen to me. You're the one doing all this stuff, and here's why you're wrong, and here's what you need to understand. See, that's why that never works.
Well, is it helpful to, if you're at the very beginning of a conflict where it's not escalated and it's not out of control, but you've touched on something and you get a little bit of reaction, if you have the presence of mind to say, wait a sec, what's going on for you right now? I mean, is that helpful to do that? Because maybe you can diffuse something before it even happens?
Oh, it's amazing. And I wish I was better at that. I'm not always great at that. Sometimes I only notice that I'm shut down when I can, you know, feel that my face is flush, or I feel warm and I'm ready to explode. Mm-hmm. Or
your heart starts to beat. Or
yeah. Or I totally am uninterested and I'm pulling away and I'm shutting down. I mean, I think really the key is to begin to become an expert in you going, what is the evidence that I'm shut down? What's the evidence that my heart is closed? And if you can really get good at that awareness, see, then that should trigger you to say, okay, let me just step back. And I'm telling you, Aaron and I will argue in the car. And it's not like I can open the door and step away from her. You know?
Yeah, that would be.
I mean, I was able to walk out of that boardroom, mm-hmm. but there's times where I'm stuck. in that time, you almost have to do it emotionally, more just kind of disengage emotionally. Now, ideally, you let the person know. Like, I think it's a great idea. A perfect situation is I would say to Aaron, you know what, honey, I love you, but right now I'm shut down. I'm not listening. I'm going to step away. I'm going to go and get my heart back open. I'll be back. We'll talk about this, but I'm not willing to do this right now. That's great if I do that. I don't always do that.
And if you do that, the spouse needs to not chase after you, because you hear those stories as well, right? You know,
Aaron used to do that. That's exactly right. Well, because I think I taught her over time is if I step away, I'm not coming back. And so it was kind of like for her, this is my only opportunity. And so that's why I always tell someone, if you kind of, you know, call the time out, you need to be the one to get you back together.
And so it can't be abandonment, because it could be taken that way, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it can be taken that way. I'm walking.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, some people, their core buttons are feeling abandoned, feeling rejected, feeling disconnected. And so that's a painful thing. They want to hang in there. But I would just challenge someone to go, how well does that go for you? When your spouse or that other person, when they're shut down and clearly their heart is closed, how safe is that for you to keep offering your heart to someone who's likely to stomp on it?
Right, right.
It just doesn't work.
Well, we need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about if there are ways, Greg, that we can maybe address the buttons during non-conflict times. And I think we probably could, because you talk about questions we can ask each other on date night where we can kind of get underneath maybe the lies that enemy's sown into our hearts. But also what to do if a couple repeats certain kinds of conflict around the same things, like they're going around the mountain all the time. What do we do, and what does that tell us about our relationship? More with Dr. Greg Smalley when we come back. Tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good buddy, Dr. Greg Smalley, having a really great conversation about conflict in marriage and how it really is a doorway to intimacy. And one of the prevailing concepts we've been talking about this hour is just the buttons that get pushed and why we need to identify those. In fact, Greg, I've heard women say, oh, that's a no-talk issue in our marriage because it triggers something in him and he doesn't want to go there. And how sad to think that we have to do the dance around these buttons when really this could be a conduit to a greater healing. And so let's just talk for a moment about during non-conflict times, how we can address these buttons. And even maybe in a date night type of situation where we're able to ask each other, what are the prevailing lies that come up? And these things are listed in one of your books about these different buttons, and I'm so sorry I can't remember which title it's in, but Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage by Greg Smalley. But let's talk about that. There's got to be ways in non-conflict time where it actually can be a healing conversation. What does that look like?
I tell you what, honestly, I'm not making this up. Some of the very best conversations that my wife and I have ever had happened because we were talking about some of these just buttons that we have. I'm not kidding you. I mean, there's been times where we've been on a family trip to the beach and Aaron and I get up early in the morning, we're walking and we'll just get into these conversations about, you know, for her, I know that she hates to feel invalidated, you know, and I'll ask her things like, hey, you know, why did that become so sensitive for you? Why do you think? And she'll start to talk about, you know, things that happened to her when she grew up. And it just, what it does for us is it gives me so much compassion and empathy for her outside of those times where we're frustrated with each other to begin to understand just her life and the experiences that she has and how Satan has used those to write these lies on her heart. And so I think it can be a great conversation I think that most of us can guess kind of what our spouse's buttons are, you know, and so just talk about them, you know, where did that come from? You know, when I say certain things, I know that's really sensitive for you. And man, I'd like to better understand that.
Yeah.
And just to tell you, when you hear those stories, like I can, you know, for me, I remember the first time I ever told her that what it was like for me having a reading disability when the teacher would call on me to read out loud, and I couldn't do that, and I would, you know, I'd sound like a weirdo, and the kids would laugh at me, and they would tease me, and it would create, I'd have panic attacks. And how even in my young 20s, if we were in a Sunday school class and someone would say, hey, Greg, would you read verse 3? I mean, I literally would break out into a panic attack. And I was able to say, Aaron, I felt so failed. I felt that I wasn't good enough, that I didn't measure up to the other students. And, but I carried those lies right smack into my marriage, and those show up. And yet to give her an opportunity just to better understand that, but then just to have the compassion. And now the one rule is this, all right, that if you start talking about these core kind of lies that have been written on your heart, these core buttons, make a commitment to each other that information is sacred. Don't you ever use that as a weapon in the heat of the battle.
So good.
In the midst of conflict. Yeah. Don't you, you know, like she would never say to me, you know, oh, I can tell I totally pushed your failure button. I mean, that's where that becomes abusive. And if that happens, you're not gonna open up with each other.
And on the flip side, that, like you said, that her sharing with you and you sharing with her has really heightened your compassion towards each other. Don't you think also then it's information for just bringing some healing in an area and bringing truth where there's been a lie? So during non-conflict times, to just be insightful in the way that you affirm your spouse and speak truth to your spouse, because suddenly then I do feel like that button will shrink because it's based on a lie. And so to bring truth there during non-conflict times, but also to walk more carefully then in conflict, because you have some privileged information now, and so you're just going to be more careful when you're going to the table to have a conflict.
Well, that's why John 8:32 says, and you will know the truth. Or it actually says, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And that's, I've experienced that over and over and over and over again. Susie, for me, it becomes real simple. If I can have the awareness to notice that we are engaging in this kind of crazy dance thing here, in this cycle that we're in, and pull back and say, Aaron, I don't know what's going on. I'm gonna take a break. But we will have this conversation. We will deal with this. And then if I go step away and go to the Lord and ask Him, God, give me some insight into what's really going on. I love that Proverbs 16:23 says a man's heart guides his mouth. In other words, when our hearts are open, see, that's when we're able to have great conversations. If that's all you hear me saying, this is a victory. If you just realize that when your buttons are pushed and your heart shut down, just take personal responsibility and step away and do what you need to do to get your heart open. And for me, it's prayer. Mm-hmm. When I go to God and just say, you know, what's going on? This is your daughter. Man, you made her. You explain her, all right? Hey, you parted the Red Sea, for crying out loud. You guys should be able to explain her to me, you know?
I love it.
I mean, as I begin to do that, I settle into that sacred place with God.
Yeah.
And then it becomes about me. And then, God, how do you want me to be? And give me your truth. And what is true about her? And that's the stuff, see, that opens my heart. And when my heart is open, that's when I'm able, even if Aaron's not in a good spot, see, that's when I am more about serving her, more interested in hearing her than me being understood. I'm willing to be compassionate. See, none of that stuff, none of the fruits of the Spirit will ever happen when your heart is closed.
Exactly.
That's the decision. That was the turning point in my life that I realized that when I get into these arguments, I need to step away, get my heart back open so that we can really have success. And I'm telling you, two open hearts, nope, you guys will have success in dealing with whatever issue you're dealing with.
I want to repeat that. None of the fruits of the Spirit will happen when your heart is closed. Such an important word. And we didn't even get into the whole idea of returning and repeating conflict. Maybe we'll have to do that next time, Greg. But
I
as I'm listening to your talk, not at all. This is so good and so important. Because what I'm listening to you say, and I've heard you say this before, that Erin is your safest place. She's your dearest friend and marriage partner. And
not in those moments, but overall she is, yes.
But you're learning to walk intimately with each other. But part of that, as I hear again and again, is your dependence on the Lord And we need that. We need to engage our walk with God in this marriage. And if we do, we're going to see something that we've never seen before. Well, this has been fabulous. Would you pray for those marriages that maybe are revisiting conflict again and again and not better for it yet, that they would come to a new place in the way they manage these things?
God, as you spoke in Hosea towards your bride, Lord, help us to remove all the unhealthy conflict out of our relationship so that we can have a safe marriage that feels like the safest place on earth, so that our hearts can not only be open but be alive. So God, in those moments where we're going to disagree and we're going to experience conflict, it will happen. You said that on this earth we will experience trials, but you said that those trials are opportunities. Mm-hmm. God, help us learn how to get our hearts open so that we can reap these amazing benefits, that when we don't agree, don't see eye to eye or get hurt, that you're going to teach us something. Lord, let us rest in that truth and pursue conflict to go through that doorway. And we'll just trust that you'll get us there, God. It's in your precious name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Appreciate you so much, Greg. Thanks for giving us your time today.
Anytime.
You're a good egg.
Thank you.
A good friend. All right. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of today's program on our website. Be sure to share it with a friend. Our website is myfaithradio.com. Have a blessed afternoon.